Well, I host something called The Aggressive Life. This is the most aggressive thing I've done in a long time. Mm. It was incredibly difficult. Right. It was not just the backbreaking work, but the behind the scenes, convincing people this is the right thing to do, figuring out how this was going to impact my family financially. You're making commitments of these are things we're going to do. And those are all aggressive things people don't want to do. It's just
save it.
This was
no, it's okay.
Yeah, save it. Save the good stuff.
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay.
No. Welcome to The Aggressive Life. I am a pastor by day. You know that, Dirt.
I know that.
Yeah, you do.
I know that well. You're actually my pastor.
Right. I am your pastor. This is not a pastor podcast. It's not even a faith podcast, though faith certainly is involved with it because I'm leading the podcast. I'm a person of faith, and I absolutely am a pastor, too. But this one was a special request by me for Dirt to do this episode. We're going to go down the rabbit hole of something in pastor world. And I'm not doing it for pastors. I'm doing it because as the host of The Aggressive Life, this is the most aggressive thing that I've done for a long, long time. And it's the most arduous thing I've done for a long, long time. It's the most difficult thing I've done for a long, long time. That's why I wanted to have an episode devoted to this. Because aggressive. We got done in my day job was something was called the push for 10X. It is analog equivalent to a campaign, but it wasn't a campaign for a couple of small minor tweaks. Well, one, I didn't want to use the word campaign because America is just sick of the word campaign in politics. Two, when we've done campaigns in the past, there have been things that I've done that I didn't want to do this time, like say, if you're not going to be a part of this, time for you to leave. I didn't want to do that for this one. And there were some other things. Anyway, it was a push. So I wanted to push on people. Just push. Like, are you close enough to God? Is Jesus bigger inside of you? What would happen if we would 10X the size of our church in 10 years, impact the kingdom of God, maybe bring an awakening to our region if God would see fit to use us that way? And just push. And it resulted in people making a 3-year financial commitment above and beyond what they regularly give. 3 years. And it resulted in a crazy amount of energy in the church, crazy amount of spiritual growth in the church, crazy amount of financial commitment, like crazy unparalleled commitments took place. I think in any industry, in any sector of America, actually probably for all of American history. We'll get into that in just a moment. And that's probably all I want to do is talk about that because I want to have somebody else talk about it. I oftentimes tell guests when they come on, hey, if you want to ask anything or talk about something, and they rarely do, but people show up here because it's, in large part, because it's me on the podcast, but I generally only do the questioning. And today I'm going to do the answering. I thought about who would be best for this, and I think the person who's best to talk to me today and ask things is Joel Fireball Whiskey. How are you, Fireball Whiskey?
10 out of 10. 10 out of 10.
That Fireball Whiskey whispers temptation in my ear. That's Florida Georgia Line for anybody who has any taste in music.
Sounded just like them.
It did sound like they broke up a while ago. I think they're still friends. But Joel Fireball, called Fireball Whiskey. I thought he was the best because, one, he's really a great leader. He's a younger leader. And he leads our 0-18 ministry. We recruited him, hired him. How many years ago now?
It's been almost 4. Okay. The summer will be 4 years. Yeah.
And he has just turned it around. He's done an amazing job with our student ministry. He's just doing phenomenal. He's one of our bright stars for the future. And he also happened to work in churches before he came to Crossroads, which gives him some perspective on how astounding this is. And I thought he might have some good questions. And some comments here. So I'm going to respond and react to you now, Fireball Whiskey. Take it away.
Right.
This is now your show.
honored to be here. And for anyone, I've done campaigns. This is not a campaign. It's a push, but I've been multiple places for it. So for anyone that is just at square zero, they don't understand fully what's going on. Any other context you kind of want to add before we hop into the real meat?
Well, in terms of what a campaign traditionally is?
Yeah, what in the world? Wait, I thought people already gave to the church. What is this special thing?
Oh, that's a good word. Okay, so churches have the level of giving that this is true 99% of the time. There are some outliers, but 99% of the time, churches get enough giving to take care of their current people and do their current ministries. If you want to do something beyond that, reach people beyond that, do a project beyond that, build an orphanage, do whatever, that 99% of churches aren't creating excess cash flow. So you end up having a campaign to fund a building, fund an expansion. Shoot, some churches have to do a campaign to re-roof the building or to put carpet in the place or to re-blacktop. We don't do campaigns for any of those things. Mm-hmm. We're blessed enough to be able to fold those into our budget. So generally, if you want to throw a downfield pass in the church world, you're going to have to make your peace with some sort of campaign.
Okay. Helpful, helpful, helpful. All right. Now, here's the real question I have and the real starter. You are how many years young?
59.
59 years young. Don't look a day over 58, all right?
Yeah.
59 years young. No, you look great for 59 and great in general.
Great for 59?
Oh, I know, I know. I heard 59. It coming out of my mouth.
The hell?
You look great for 49.
Yeah.
There we go, there we go.
All right.
10 out of 10. And
do you find me attractive?
Cool. Here's what I say. This is on camera, and he signs all my paychecks. So very. 10 out of 10. The way the light's hitting him, it's great.
Yes.
So to be honest, though, you had, I mean, if we were just talking modern day retirement, people are talking now 55 retirement. At best, pastors we're seeing go till 65. So you started this church, one of the largest churches in the country, smooth running organization. You've led it with integrity. There's been no moral failure. Why not spend your last season just coasting, finishing? Like, why do a push? Where did this come from?
Well, I understand the question because, yeah, I asked myself that. Hmm. Yeah, that's why this was hard. This was an aggressive move to do it, is because I wrestled with God over whether or not I wanted to do this. Just about anybody would love to have in their organization more resources. But no one wants to do the things that get those resources, at least very few people. What did that mean? It meant that I was going to have, you know, a long period of time losing evenings for meetings, mission briefings, as we called them, letting people know what was happening. It meant if we did this that I would have more criticism, because whenever you start talking about money, the crazies come out. They want to find a reason not to give, and they want to criticize X, Y, Z, and everything else. I knew there would be staff tensions because, you know, staff are operating on very thin financial margins. They're already running really hard. Now we're going to layer this on top of that. And I knew, maybe worst of all, that Lib and I, we had the lead here financially. And we needed to make a sacrificial commitment. So all of those things combined was why I would drag my feet on this, and I wasn't really up for it. I think what got me over the hump, Joel, was the dream of an awakening. Now, what happens if God brings a supernatural outpouring of his spirit? And we can be involved in that, or maybe he might even use us to kickstart it. I think it was that dream more than dollars, just represented the potential for that dream. Yeah. And also, I've already declared that I'm done at 70. So I've said that's my finish line.
You can do it to 80.
Yeah, I maybe could. Maybe could. I'm actually, Joe, I'm having so much fun right now.
Come on.
So much fun. I'm second guessing why I declared that, you know, but I do have a finish line on the senior pastor role there. And so, you know, it's a final push for me, a final decade push. You know, I'm going to be knocking on 60 next October. October 1st, if you want to send me a very expensive gift card or
you're going to need it after
or
the push.
A gun or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I heard a quote recently that said, your church can never outgive the generosity of the leader. Would you agree with that, disagree with that? Because I know many people might criticize a larger church for doing something like this, but this isn't benefiting you. This cost you. You went first. Do you want to speak to that at all?
I agree with that. I think there is a spiritual realm at work in all of our lives. It's an invisible reality. The book of Ephesians talks about there's principalities and powers at work. There's just stuff that's underneath the scenes you can't see with your eyes, which means that certain things are true. Like if you're leading something, the speed of the leader, speed of the team, or don't expect people to do what you're not already doing. You have to be able to model what you want to motivate people to do. In everything. Mm. If you're not having a prayer time, don't plan on anybody else having a prayer time. Mm. If you're not loving your kids, don't plan anybody else loving their kids. And if you're not taking on financial commitments to bless other people, don't expect other people to do it. So yeah, I agree. Now, does that mean that the senior pastor has to be the largest financial contributor? No, the senior pastor never is that, because he never makes more money than, you know, people in the church. Does it mean the senior pastor is going to be the most financially pinched in the church, the most sacrificial? Maybe. I don't think that's the way it was this time. In the early days, it was. Yeah, the early days, we gave everything, like it all. We didn't sell our house, but all, to the point where God's got to show up here for us to hit our car insurance.
Wow.
You know, people end their commitment early. And I remember just like wrestling with God, like, wait a minute, there's no way we can end ours early. It's just, yeah. It's like paycheck by paycheck. And, and I made my peace with it. Well, you know, God hasn't called them to sacrifice as much as I'm going to. Mm. So, but all that stuff, Joel, is a backdrop for why you don't want to do this. Mm. This episode might inspire you. Yeah, I'm never doing one of those. Or could inspire you, I got to start giddy up, you know?
Yeah. Or if you do, it's going to be hard.
Yes, it is.
So let's talk about it. Spoiler alert, there was some success to this, which we'll get to. I'll let you reveal numbers and data, but let's start at the beginning. What's the origin story? You said
you don't
want
to tell them the beginning at the end, so they know that
they
should probably
keep listening.
All right, fine.
They got to keep listening.
Fine.
But you're in charge here.
No, you're in charge.
Right,
I already
right.
gave it to you.
So it is.
You
a
failed
success.
The first test. This is the first test. You actually
you don't
want
to look a day
lead.
Over 19.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So let's get to the origin story of this. Knowing it's some type of a success, you use the word awakening. Expand.
Well, as I'm getting older, there's things in the Bible that I haven't seen that I want to see. My list for what those things were 15 years ago is a lot shorter than what it is right now, because I'm seeing it. Larger. Like, I wanted to see a board that was full of people who had come to know Christ inside the church where they were. You know, we're seeing that. Not everybody, but we got a good percentage of people on our board who have come to know Christ inside the church that we're in. I would have wanted to see and have my hand in miraculous healings from prayer. And I didn't really have much of those at all 20 years ago. I've had the opportunity and blessing to be involved in a lot of those right now. A lot. One of the things in the Bible, the New Testament, that I want to see and be a part of is a genuine awakening. Acts chapter 2, the day of Pentecost, the Holy Spirit falls on groups of people and they start speaking languages they never heard in a classroom. People start giving their lives to Christ in large numbers, and it's just a runaway train. They start changing culture and society. It's arguable that Crossroads has been a slow-moving awakening. It's arguable that we have. You know, it's expected now that you're just going to baptize 2,000 people every year. We've done it for the last 3 years or something like that. So it's arguable that this is happening. It just looks like a different form than it would have been in Acts 2. But I'd like to see more. And as I started reading and talking with people who are experts on this, I thought, yeah, there's a different gear that I want to be able to hit here.
And then where does the space part of this fall in? Going after the moon.
Yeah. This is the providential hand of God. You know, sometimes you can't see God moving, but his hand is always underneath moving. He's always working some way. I was on a plane and I watched a movie with Ryan Gosling. I think it was called First Man. It was about the space race, and I was just at that movie. I remember crying in my seat. And the main reason I cried wasn't because I was inspired by space, but I cried because it showed the tension that he and his wife had. It showed that his commitment to the mission was hurting the family and hurting their intimacy. That's my story. My commitment to the mission of the kingdom of God, commitment to the mission of Crossroads, really hurt our marriage almost irreparably. It isn't. We're living in the best place we've ever been. It's fantastic. But I watched that story. I said, yeah, that was Lib. A lot of nights me away and doing things that were dangerous, but feeling like I just had to do it. It was part of what the mission was. And she was left holding the bag. It really, like, it was the first time I saw that in a movie. It was really, really powerful. And then that launched me on a, I need to read more stuff about this Apollo thing. I remember when I was a little kid watching it in preschool, but then I got this book called Apollo 8, and it mesmerized me. So I was on this journey of just finding something that paralleled ministry, but wasn't ministry, but I just felt gripped my heart. I learned a long time ago, the key isn't reading a lot. The key is reading the right things. And I just got into a vein that was stimulating to me. And then I came in to work one day for a meeting, and they said, hey, we've got this meeting of a creative meeting. It's a pre-idea meeting of what the push could be around, what the creative parameters could be. And what do you know? Somebody else other than me had the idea for a moonshot. I was like, you're kidding me. God's moving here. And then I find out the book that's been impactful for me the last few years is called 10X is Easier or Better Than 2X. And in the Apollo notes, they actually said, we have to 10X our ability here.
Wow.
We got a white label our stuff. We got to whitewash it. Start over, ground from the ground, because we're not going to beat the Russians unless we do something whole, totally different to have 10x potential. So I'm like, God, 10x. That's right there with NASA. It's with a space theme, and God's been calling me to 10x my life, which is why we've made adjustments with Kyle and others. And like, so all that came. I saw the hand of God moving there.
Wow. I'm going to bring us back. I want to go off script a little bit. We're going to get into the numbers if you're listening, but I want to hit on something you said there. So I know a lot of people listen to your podcast. They're business owners, they're entrepreneurs, they're young leaders, they're young pastors, they're church planters. And you mentioned this phase where it was hard or hard.
Yeah, hard. That was one of the inspirational things that also moved me deeply was Kennedy's speech when he was at Rice University. Which Rice is in Texas, and they used to play Texan football, this much smaller school. And he said, some would ask, why do you want to go to the moon? My response, why does Rice play Texas? Because it's hard. Because it's hard. Just doing hard things. I love that.
Do hard. In fact, that was one of our primary weeks of this push, hard things. So speak to the business owner, entrepreneur that maybe has a myth of balance right now. Right. You get where I'm going after. I want to make it big. I want to change the world, but it has to fit in with my 9-to-5. It has to fit in with my workout schedule. It has to fit in with when the kids go to school. Like, talk about what does it look like to do hard things, and how do you come out healthy on the other side?
You're perfectly designed to get the results you're getting right now. Whatever results you're getting, your personal life, your business life, your church life, you're perfectly designed to get those results. That's why you're getting those results. And even if you didn't put any time into your design, you've accidentally fell into a design that's producing those results. So if you want different results, higher numbers, deeper impact, whatever it is, it means you're going to have to do something that you're not doing right now. Because you're not doing it right now, it's going to be harder than what you're doing right now. That's just the law of life. It's a leadership lesson. And we don't want that. We just want to keep verifying and justifying that what I'm doing right now is going to work. I just need like a little more management. I need a little more systems. And fine, get more management system. But no, you're not going to go to the next level until you do something different. And we like to think, church says, oh, well, I just got to pray. I just pray and hope God blesses it. Definitely pray. Definitely hope God blesses it. But the way you take new territory is the way the nation of Israel took the promised land. They crossed over a body of water they'd never been across before. the Jordan River. They didn't listen to 10 people who were afraid and kept them back for 40 years. And they literally fought for the land. God gave them the land, meaning you can pick up a sword and fight for the land. So the things that you're going to have to do to get yourself forward, they're always going to be new things. They're always going to be uncomfortable, and they're always going to be hard. Always. And if they're not that, it's not going to get you forward.
That's great. Well, we did the hard things. You led us through hard things, and I would argue it moved us forward. So let's get into some results. What were you hoping for on the other side of this, not campaign, this financial push, and what did we see?
So Crossroads is a big church, very big church, and we've had for the last 3 or 5 years a real push, 6 years, a real push to get our church to tithe. We've had series on it every other year.
What's a tithe?
A tithe is 10% of your gross income to your local church. I don't want to go and get into all the biblical reasons why that is, but that's what that is. And it's really helped the church a lot financially. We've got money to do ministry, and we're reaching new people, and people are growing. It's really, really good. And our annual budget is higher than it would have been otherwise. So when we realized that we had some things that we needed to fund that we didn't have it for, we had some people who knew a lot about these things. They looked at our history of giving. They looked at our donor base. They looked at a bunch of things. And they concluded that since we had so many more people tithing, those people were already giving part of what they would have had in a traditional campaign gift anyway. And so we could most likely expect to see $75 million additional above and beyond our regular giving, $75 million.
With such a healthy community of givers, there's not much more access, you're saying.
So that's the belief.
That's about the peak, 75. Okay.
That was the
Which
belief.
Is a lot of money.
That is a lot of money.
$75 million, yeah.
That's a lot. And our annual giving right now is $64, $65 million, something like that. So it's more than that. It's, you know, 1.X. So that's okay. But at that point, Joel, I wasn't really fixated on the money. At that point, I was fixated on the awakening. And I heard that financial types have to do that. They have to have some kind of planning. And I sat in the meeting or meetings and really, okay, fine. It didn't matter what they said. It wasn't going to affect what my schedule or my prayer life was going to look like over the next several months. I just knew I needed to do what God was asking me to do, irregardless of what people thought it was going to do. And in the end, those estimates were vastly low. Did you ask the next question, how much it was?
I say we get into it. I say we did the hard things. You led us through hard things. So what was the result? Did it move us forward?
It moved us forward as a church spiritually, for sure. More people are closer to God than ever before inside of our church. There's a revival that's happened inside of Crossroads. It's crazy. And yeah, so the 3-year commitments above and beyond people are give where it's is right now is $205 million. That's above and beyond what people regularly give.
Yeah.
So that's still going on the everyday giving, whatever we $64, $65 million now. In addition to that, $205 million.
Now, since I get to see behind the curtain a little bit, I think this is kind of a cool thing. Before we knew that number, there was a number after you'd heard the 75 that you were praying for, kind of your moonshot. Do you want to share that number?
200.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you announced to our staff what the number was, what was it?
At that point, I think it was like 195 or something like that. So yeah, I announced to staff last Wednesday. Yeah. And since I announced staff last Wednesday, it's gone up over $10 million because there's a wave that's crossed our church and people want to jump on the love train. You know, it's really weird. You would think like the larger the number, the more it would disincentivize people because, oh, I'm not needed. What's my little bit here? But it's actually worked exactly the opposite because there's a move of God happening and people are really excited and people want to be in. They don't want to be left behind. They want to be part of it.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Fantastic. And you said you should have started praying for 300.
Should have prayed for 300. I did. As soon as it came in like that, I was like, oh my gosh. It's kind of like if you list your house for whatever, because if you list your house for $200,000 and then someone comes and like they give you the asking price the first weekend, you're not excited. You're going, oh, crap, I listed it too low.
Yeah, that's right.
I kind of felt that way. I thought, oh, man, I was probably praying too low. I should pray for 300.
That's so good. Okay, well, here's kind of my final wing of this. I know, as a staff member behind the scenes, of course, we were public about what this is funding, human trafficking and helping end it in Nepal and India, as well as getting into prison ministries, Next Generation Wing, camps, all this stuff. That said, from an outside perspective, right now, the mega church finances and just kind of scrutiny against them, why would we lean in? Why would we show our numbers publicly? Why wouldn't we just behind the scenes say, yep, we got a lot, you know, type thing? Like what is, are you seeing any of that? I know, yeah, and I know there are some bad apples out there. So, yeah, how do you speak to that?
Well, this is the first time we're showing our numbers publicly. I've instructed our social media and everybody, we do not publish that number. This is not an X because, yeah, it's going to freak people out. I mean, local United Way in Cincinnati, I think, was $43 million a year or something like that. Mm. And that's every corporation in Cincinnati when they squeeze them for fair share giving and CEOs, you feel like they got to get people to go. So I don't know if there's ever been that amount in a campaign, in any sector, in any, you've had like Ray Kroc's widow gave Salvation Army like $1 billion for community centers or something like that. You've had those kind of crazy, but in terms of like a sustainable, I don't know of anything that's ever happened like this. So yeah. We don't want to do that because people aren't going to understand it. But in the context of this podcast, it's not the number, really not. It is these listeners here. We're trying to encourage them to make aggressive moves. And we made an aggressive move, a bunch of them, and it's had fruit. I want people to have more fruit.
I think from my angle, you host a podcast called The Aggressive Life, and this was your chance to be aggressive. What do you have to say to people out there that maybe you've pushed on before to be aggressive? But this wasn't you just pushing people. You were living this out first. From the most recent aggressive move you made, actually that you're making, you still got 3-year financial commitment to live out.
Right.
In the moment, what advice do you have to anyone, church leaders, business leaders, entrepreneurs, husbands, wives, et cetera, in the most aggressive moments of their life?
Well, you're here to lead. Any of those titles you just meant, they're leadership. You lead. That means you have to get there first. Hmm. A shepherd gets to the field first, or at least he's been there, so he knows the grass is there so he can take the sheep there. You've got to get there first. You've got to get there first, understanding that something like a push is necessary. You've got to get there first, understanding that, okay, you're willing to sacrifice financially again. You've got to get there first, and then you have to be patient as people drag their feet and they have questions. Because when you got there first, you had questions for a long time before you declared yourself. Mm. I did. This was before I declared myself. This was about a year and a half process of internal wrestling until we declared ourselves and announced. You have to be at peace with that. That means there's just going to be tension that you feel that nobody else feels. Mm. You're going to feel alone because you are alone. Because you are leading. You're feeling this thing. You're starting this thing. Got to be comfortable with it, though. That's what leaders do.
It's great. So just because you're being aggressive doesn't mean you're not wrestling while you do
it. It's very hard. Well, I was still wrestling when I decided to do the push. Didn't mean I understood how much Lib and I were going to give. Hmm. That didn't really come into fruition. I had a number that was a massive number for us, but it didn't really come into fruition until maybe week 3 or week 4 of the push.
So you were already running.
Hmm. Yeah, I was running.
So you were already making aggressive moves. Okay,
yeah, I wasn't in the financial discernment process a year and a half ago. I was in the spiritual discernment process. Is this the right thing for the kingdom of God, for the church, and
great.
For me?
Great.
Big news. The final book in the 5 Marks of a Man library, a 60-day devotional, officially releases on December 3rd. It's chock full of original teaching, scripture, prayers, challenges to get you off the bench and into the game. You're going to grow in what you practice. And this book is all about that, focusing on and growing each of the 5 marks in your life until they become second nature. What are they? Men have a vision. Men take a minority position. Men are team players. Men work, and men are protectors. The Five Marks of Man devotional, 60 Days to a Powerful Life, is a perfect gift for men of all ages, whether they're 13 or 103. Buy the Five Marks for Man devotional on Amazon or wherever you buy your books. Now let's get on with the show. Yeah, so I'm curious for you, Fireball Whiskey, what... This is your first time being in something like this here.
Yeah.
What was different for you versus ones you've similar things that you've experienced in other contexts?
Yeah, BT, you are not going to like this answer. You're going to judge this answer.
Okay.
Previous organizations where I've been a part of a campaign, it was not required for the most internal people, staff, et cetera, to be part of it. Ann and I were... we were excited for this. It actually got less exciting the closer we got, but we were excited for this when it was a distant idea because we've felt similar, closer to God when we've been pushed financially. But in previous times, you'd get 30, 40, 50% of staff involved, and then you'd get 30, 40, 50% of the church involved. And so I won't out the church, but I did just recently hear of a church that met about 25% of their financial campaign goal. Theirs were almost an exact alignment date-wise as ours. So they just wrapped up.
Interesting.
Met about 25%, and it came back about 30% of their staff were involved in it. So I'd say that's the biggest difference.
I heard another one that was 50% of their stated goal, and it was 20% of their staff involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to get back to leadership, this is just, you haven't asked your question or made your statement yet, but yeah, it's like, we spent months getting staff aligned on this. Months.
Yeah.
You can't have somebody who is full-time committed to ministry, even though they're on the lower end of the pay scale from somebody who's, in the business world. You can't have people who are actually called to ministry and called to do this thing who also aren't called to make some sort of financial commitment. That's an absolute.
Yeah.
When I find churches having a hard time with money, I'm always say first thing, look what your board members are given. Look what your staff is given. Because again, back to that principalities and powers, that spiritual realm, we've got to cope with that and bring things in alignment.
Well, and this is where I'll pass it back to you because it will answer the question, yet you'll get to get into what I think was one of the secret sauces on being on. This is my third campaign or financial commitment at a church, but my first one with Crossroads. And so besides just the staff thing, there was something you hinted at it called mission briefings. We saw, I believe it was 4,000, maybe 4,500 people in living rooms, not in a living room, in living rooms, who all individually got to see behind the curtain, and it was a lot of work. I believe 102 different meetings. Are those numbers sounding accurate?
Roughly.
Yeah. Tell everybody about mission briefings and maybe even compare them to past campaigns. Like what are they? Have they always been a part of the secret sauce, and have they always been called mission briefings, or what are they?
Yeah, we used to call them personal contact meetings. Okay. The last time we did a campaign, it was called I'm In. It had a military theme and people jumping out of planes. And so that's where the mission briefing came in. This is our mission. Let's brief on that, which the military may do. So we carried that over to it. Yeah, it was a huge Herculean thing. We wanted everybody in the church to be in a mission briefing. We didn't actually want to spend too much time on the weekend talking about the projects, or as we call it in our context, the territories that God wanted us to expand. Mm. We wanted the nuts and bolts and the numbers to be someplace else. We wanted to keep it really spiritually focused, heart-focused on the weekends and in the printed guide that we gave people. So that was the time to get down and dirty on numbers. And we had to do some different things. In the past, only I've done them, or maybe one or two other people. But this time we got all of our community pastors involved, all of them, all of our teaching pastors. So people were hosting meetings left and right. And it really helped us fan out and spread out. And then if you didn't get invited to one of those, which what we did for that was we said, okay, Brian, how many meetings can you do? And my assistant said, well, in the next 6 weeks, you can do this many. How many? Okay, how many people can you host? So we did the math and said, okay, with everybody, come on. Joel, how many? You attended, but you actually didn't host any, did you, Joel?
I was it's called a wingman. So every single person was deemed a wingman to help behind the scenes, get stuff, talk with people. So I was at 7 of those.
Okay.
And wildly enough, on the lower side, a lot of people, we were required 4, but I think a lot of people, how many did you do? 20?
11.
Close enough. Yeah. So, I mean, it was wild. And just to let people know, I mean, this wasn't just, hey, some of these people are driving 30, 40 minutes. I heard one person was driving from Dayton because it was the one they could make.
Right.
So you make it worth it. I mean, there is food, snacks, drinks.
Right.
You're spending time with them.
Yeah, half hour finger foods. We got beers and wines. We want to do that and other stuff. Just half hour hanging out. And then we half hour of getting to know one another. People hear other people's story. And then an hour of projects and numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. So outside of mission briefings, for people listening that are, all right, I'm ready to make an aggressive move as a business leader, church planter, mother, father, you know, outside of mission briefings, especially in the organizational leadership world, what are some other behind the scenes secrets that you can just kind of give people to go out there and be aggressive themselves?
Oh, that's good. And the thing they're leading. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll just, instead of talk about general principles, which we do a lot, I'll just keep it on the push and just keep it here. I think alignment is really big with everybody in the organization. You've got to have an alignment journey with staff and with board. You can't just say, we're going to do this and everyone's excited. No, you've got to let people process that through. You need to have that. You need to have something that's the creative container for it to fit in. And that creative thing is something that you personally are excited about. You also need to make sure that the right people in the church hear about it in the right time. The way we got the mission briefs, we just found out how many we can do, did the math, how many mission briefs, and then we said, okay, if it's, you said 4,500, if that's what it is, okay. We took the top 4,500 givers because the people who are giving are the people who are going to be most warm. Hmm. I don't know what the number 4,500 gave. It wasn't probably that much. I don't know what it was. It wasn't like, but you're just trying to get people included, bring people in to be part of the journey because it's a journey. Another thing I would say on these is this is a big one. I'll ruffle some feathers on this. If I ever get to talk to the pastor and I talk about this, I know what they'll say. They'll say, "No, that was a one fund, right? That's the nomenclature most churches are in one fund. Have people make a commitment that's their tithe and then whatever they're going to do above that and put it all into one fund. No, one fund's a horrible idea."
Huh.
I've been saying for years, a horrible idea. No offense to those of you who've done it. You just left a lot of potential on the table. Yeah. Let's just use a round number. This isn't that unusual in culture anymore, but let's just say someone's making $100,000. So they're making $100,000 and they're already tithing $10,000. Say they're tithing $10,000. And then you take them through one fund. They come to the end. They write their card down. And they go, okay, well, I'm going to start. Okay, well, first, I'm already at $30,000. Sheesh, $30,000 already over 3 years I'm giving. Dag. Already 30? Well, meanwhile, if you're tithing or doing that, it's automatic. You're not feeling that at all.
Yeah.
It's just on and going. So you already start in a hole because people are going, they're reminded of already what they're doing, and they're already doing a lot. And so you properly affirm people for that and all that stuff, but you tell them, hey, that's funding the missions of our church, the ministry, the benevolence, all this stuff. Thank you, but we're trying to take new ground. That's why we need above and beyond. Mm. So it gets people out of just looking at what they're currently giving into what their next new normal is. That's a big thing. I'm not a one fun thing at all, unless you have a very small vision. Mm. If you just need new roofs and carpets, fine, do one fund. But if it's something that is beyond your understanding and requires big, big faith, you're going to require big, big numbers and never give people an excuse not to give.
Yeah, talk about that big vision. I remember growing up, I'm a pastor's kid. We did one growing up that switched us from pews to chairs. That was our big, which was controversial, but also financial. But that was it. That was the end vision. Talk about, it almost feels selfish to say, hey, no, we need more than chairs. We need to go, you know, but I know it's kingdom minded. Just expand. Why is it actually selfless to go after more than less?
Everything about Jesus' life was about more.
Hmm.
Everything. All of his teachings was about more. More obedience to God, more of your heart to God, more of people in the kingdom. You know, he gives the parable of the good soils. There's different soils like rocky path, thorns, all these things, beaten path. And then the good soil produces a return, 30, 60, and 100x. 30, 60. When I internalized that most recently, I thought I probably should repent for calling this a 10x.
It's great.
10x push. We should at least come for 30x, right? Hmm. Jesus tells people to get into boats, go all over the world, share the gospel. he takes the 70-ish and he has them go up in pairs and tells them to go out into the countryside and to go out and do their thing. Everything is about, the kingdom is about advancing. Jesus says, greater things will you do. Greater. Hmm. His expectation is greater. And he would be incredibly gratified. This is almost going to sound heretical, but I'm going to say it anyway. Jesus never moved people to commit $205 million.
Expand on that.
He never made, he had some funding mechanism, some funding, we don't know a lot about it, but he, you know, this is a greater thing that he did in terms of numbers. Jesus never built a 100,000 square foot building, if you've ever done that. Jesus never started a camping ministry where people go out and people from all over the country and world come to him. We had our last man camps, 7 countries, 42, 43 states. I'm not saying we're better than Jesus. I don't even come close to, not close. But Jesus knew what he was doing. He was setting a foundation for his believers to build on what he did. Mm. That's what he meant. Can we just take him at face value and just say greater things? That's in the Bible. That's Jesus. That means that he wants us to keep pushing and keep going. And this whole thing of just a teaching center where people get taught, or people have their wounds bound up because the big bad world's hurting them, or this place where we can have just pure entertainment that isn't tainted by the world. I'm fine. Let's have all those things. Fine. But that is not more. That is not the kingdom. That's just table stakes into doing what God wants you to do.
How many emails on a regular basis or messages do you get that are on the cynical side about growth?
I'm not getting that much anymore, Joel. Hmm. We've pretty much frustrated and chased those folks off, which also I think one of the reasons why this push number is so high and so astronomical. It's just crazy insane. I mean insane. Because our church is more committed. We have the average commitment level per person is way higher than it was 5 years ago. And the people who are in, and you don't have to explain to them why it's good to reach new people and why it is good to grow. That's why they're doing what they did.
Can we talk about an aggressive move in the middle of this? I don't even know if it was related, but it definitely helped, that I think ties into just leaders listening. You replaced yourself, or at least a lot of what you do, and gave somebody else, you were senior and lead pastor, Brian Tome, and you gave one of those titles away, and I think helped multiply us during this. You want to talk about that at all?
Yeah. We had him on. Well, actually, he did a role like you did. He interviewed and asked some questions a couple of years ago, I think it was, Kyle Ranson. He's the lead pastor. I'm the senior pastor. That ended up being really brilliant for the push.
I think it was a secret sauce.
It was part of it. It was because it told the church, okay, BT is getting a little older there, and he does do dangerous things. He fights, he shoots guns, and he rides motorcycles. What happens if the guy's gone? Well, it kind of answered that. Oh, if he's gone for whatever reason, Kyle's here. We really like the guy. He's a really, really good and strong leader. So it gave people comfort that I'm not just committing to a guy's vision. This is our vision, a we thing. The second thing it did was it just multiplied my impact, because if he has that title, he can go and do things and people take him more seriously than he was before. When he leads a mission briefing, it's just as important as if it was me. If he goes up and visits our Dayton campus or Columbus campus, it's like I went up. I'm not going to be able to get around to all those places. I've replicated myself in that. And that move gave people a lot of comfort, not just more logistical firepower.
Was that hard for you?
It hasn't been hard since I've done it, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
It's been damn easy.
Okay. up into making that decision.
It was hard, but the only reason it was hard had nothing to do with pride or ego. It was only, is this a sign that I'm getting lazy? Am I trying to give work away to somebody? Am I saying I don't want to have the same work ethic that I had before? What is this saying? It was that personal pride hang up on that. No, giving the
that makes sense.
Giving the title away, no problem. Giving the authority away, no problem. A higher salary to him, no problem. You know, all, no, no problem. It was that like, wait, am I? Does this mean I'm phoning it in now? Mm. Are people going to perceive me as being a slacker now? Those are things that made it hard initially, and obviously those were bad voices, and I got over it.
That's right. That's right. Well, that's fantastic. I got a good one here. We've talked about organizationally, personally, what has this push done for you?
Well, you talked about Kyle and just the organization behind it. This is the first time I've gotten to the end of something like this, and I haven't been totally worn out and on the verge of collapse. Mm. I mean, I feel just really great and energized right now, because I'm not sure how much of it is that the things that were different in this campaign were so life-giving, this push were so life-giving, or how much of it is that I am more spiritually mature than when I did something like this before 9 years ago. Hmm. My identity wasn't tied up into it as far as, hey, if this doesn't come in, then I'm a loser. If this doesn't come in, people don't like me anymore. If this doesn't come in, then how does the church go forward? Those kind of questions used to haunt me and would put more internal pressure on me. And that just hasn't been the case.
Hmm. So for both you personally and now—
I'll give you another one. How it's helped for me. So my energy, it's shown that, you know, I can take more and not be worn down. Lib and I, this is the first time— she's pushed me on our financial commitment number. I came in at a number, and then she came in a number that was 2x higher than mine. And she's never been a stingy person, but I've been the person been more pushing it than she has.
That's cool.
And it was really sweet and redemptive to go through this push and for our marriage to be in as good or a better place than it was before.
That's great.
That was really – it was also first time that we went through this and all of our kids were of their own adult age. Hmm. All of our kids made their own commitments. Hmm. You know, and we didn't, they're not living in our roof. We're not going, hey, by the way, everyone's going to do X, Y, Z. My daughter was telling me about something. She's talking with one of her siblings. And she said that they were talking, the three of the siblings sitting around talking. And she said, we all concluded that our faith is stronger because we went through those campaigns and didn't have cable and didn't have XYZ. You know, when you're adult kids, we look back and that formed us in ways that we didn't think
we could.
They did
something
hard. Because it was hard. That was meaningful when she said that. So I'm in a better place than I am right now because of God pushing me, and I'm really grateful.
It's great. Yeah. Here's a big question. It really is. What happens now? I mean— okay, a big number is committed. It's not in. We're going to act like it is? Are we going to... What is next?
So we've only been through the discernment part of the journey. Now we have the action part of the journey or the fulfillment part of the journey where people have to actually do what they say. That's mm-hmm. what's now. That's important, heavy lifting. Because a lot of people have this exuberant, whoo, I made that commitment. Whoo, it was great. And it is great. It's awesome. That's why I love Commitment Sunday. We come forward and people bring their cards. We did it one time many, many years ago. We were on the leading edge of tech, having people text in their number, or we were thinking about that, and we said, no, we can't do that. Some things you just need a tactile thing. So people are coming forward and dropping their cards with their families on boxes or in this case, NASA mission control desks, dropping them in there, and you're up there because you want to be part of it.
Those are on the stage. You want to talk about why they're on the stage?
Yeah, they're on the stage because people are consecrating themselves. They're bringing themselves forward as a sacrifice. It's like you're bringing your lamb to the altar. You're coming. You're consecrating yourself. You're stepping out. And I love being up on stage when that happens and just seeing people teary, seeing people resolute. Some people I'll fist bump, like, come on, you know. Other people I see, I'll go and hug them. But people can see me or the community pastors on the stage. It's a beautiful, really nice pastoral moment. And those stories are crazy. I mean, dude, I don't know if you have any, but they're crazy.
Any off the top of your head?
Okay, I'll give you a few.
Yeah.
I'll give you two. One guy had an atheist who was, his dad was an atheist, and he recently died, and he got his whole inheritance, and he said, this inheritance has to go. It's got to go to the push. As an atheist.
I hadn't heard that one.
My atheist dad is going to fund the push, the kingdom of God, whether he likes it or not. That's awesome.
That's neat.
The other one, I don't know if I've told you this one. This is unfreaking believable.
Oh, this is the one you said you were going to share with the staff, but you didn't know if you could yet.
And I didn't.
No, I haven't heard it yet.
I guess this is it.
I'm excited.
So a guy who's younger, has a lot of resources. He starts wrestling with a rich young ruler. The story that Jesus tells a rich young ruler, oh, you want to get into heaven, huh? Well, just sell everything you have and give it to the poor. Of course, the guy leaves and is dejected and he's crushed. This guy starts wrestling with the rich young ruler, and I'm not sure why he would. We didn't talk to the rich young ruler. It wasn't even a verse in the guide that we published and gave to people. I don't even remember the last time I preached on the rich young ruler. I don't know where he gets it somewhere. And so as he's wrestling it through, he says, Jesus gave that challenge to this guy. He doesn't give it to everybody's buddy. He gave it to this guy, which also in that story, you know, there's two rich young rulers. There's the rich young ruler who gets the challenge, and there's the rich young ruler who's already done the challenge. Mm. That is Jesus. Mm. He's young. And he was rich and loaded in heaven, and he emptied himself, taking the form of a servant.
I hadn't heard that take yet.
Yeah, that comes from Tim Keller.
Oh, preach.
So he concludes, this guy concludes, and his new wife concludes that money has a grip on me. And Jesus was giving this guy an out, a way to break it. And I want to break it. And then he goes a level further. This is he's processing with God. I've never thought of this before. He goes, you know, that guy was young, and he could have made all that money back. What would it have been like to make all that money back, but now your heart's right and you have the blessing of God on your life? So he says, that's what I'm going to do. He's our largest giver, largest commitment. I don't want to tell you how much it is. It freaking blow your mind.
Oh, my gosh. Largest commitment that we've ever gotten in the history.
Largest commitment we've ever, ever, ever gotten.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, largest commitment we've ever gotten. And it's because he decided to give it all, and trust that God is going to, trust that God's going to bless him and go forward. I mean, that's like, okay, I've never heard anybody doing that. Nobody. Never, ever. I've never, ever, 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 ever. I don't care if you're making minimum wage or what. And people thought, well, if you had a lot of money, you could. You could. No, you can't. No, you can't. You say that just because you don't give a lot. Mm. A big number in the bank is a harder number to give than a small. When I gave it all our first couple of campaigns, it was all. And how I could. I didn't give it all this time for. I was just processed with God. I was up for it. I didn't give it all this time, but it's just harder. Mm. And so that level of commitment and faith, we're seeing that stuff here, and it's astounding.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, I'm sharing big numbers here right now, but I know when this is the time everybody checks out.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, let me just say this. We've never had a campaign where there was any more than one seven-figure gift, and that one was $1 million. So our last time we did a campaign, as large as crossed with tens of thousands of people, there was one seven-figure gift. But it's also at that time a church at 20,000 too. We're always pastors oftentimes look for reasons why it's not true and it wouldn't work for them because they know it'd be really hard and they don't want to do it. So you just want to think, well, you had some billionaire in your shirt. Well, you had this. No. We took people on a spiritual journey, and everybody, and for some reason, this time, we had a crazy, crazy amount. Well, one of them, I don't know if you know him or not, one just been in church only a year. They were a board member in another church, which we don't target board members of other churches, and their kid just got locked into your student ministry and loves it. Been here for less than a year, and it was a massive, massive gift. You know, we had what is it, $181,000 come in from kids?
Yeah, that's
students,
right. That's right.
My gosh. I heard from one, and they said that they were actually kind of ticked off with their student because they saw what he was doing in the service and then said, what do you think I'm going to get that money from? And I said, well, you said if I got a scholarship, then you're going to give me X amount of money. I'm going to give all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you've got people making massive, massive sacrifices in this thing. We had a woman last time we did this. Her sacrifice was to go 3 years without using the dryer at the laundromat.
Wow.
Because she could save quarters. So she could put that money in. And I saw her back on this one. I don't know what she's done this one. Single mom. You hear those stories. That sacrifice, that's the heart of God. And I may talk about the big numbers only because I want to get attention that big numbers are out there to push the vision forward. But the truth is, it's the vast number of quote unquote smaller numbers that gets the job done. This is the only time we've ever actually seen big numbers like we are right now. It's always been a lot of small numbers. And the truth is, the smaller numbers are most likely the most generous numbers too.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've earned our stripes, and there's no longer any sense that something is weird happening behind the scenes. We've been here for 28 years now. We've done every single thing we ever said we would do.
Yeah.
Some of them failed. We did every single thing we ever said we would do. Privately funded AIDS hospice. Yep. New campus in Dayton. Yep. Take hundreds of people over to South Africa mission trip. Yep. Just go on and on and on and on. There's dozens and dozens of those things. And maybe there was a time where a higher level of trust kicked in, which is how people were able to be as generous as they are. I don't know what it is, but it's astounding. It blows me away.
Yeah, and talk about the last week you said from stage, which I think is one of the parts that we are going to spend this.
Right.
That much money coming. Shouldn't we bury it? Shouldn't we save some? Talk about that. I think that's why people gave.
Right, 100%. I interact with people who have got these cash reserves in their church, and they ask how Crossroads keeps growing, what keeps happening, and I ask them how much money they have, and I said, well, it's very simple. Spend money. You're sitting on 6 months of operating cash. Why should God do anything different in your ministry? We never have 6 months, because that money is fuel to burn the fire brighter. Why would you sit on those assets? Put it into play. We tell our church that. No one's excited to sacrifice for church so a church can get out of debt. Woohoo! No one's excited to sacrifice for a church so that the church has adequate savings. No, you sacrifice because you see where the mission's going to do, and you do that. And that's a massive deal. We spend money, and I believe there's never been an American or an international church that has more assets on hand than the American church right now. And do you wonder why we're not getting things done? Are you kidding me? Rick Warren said in the early days, the church is all about vision. In the later days, it's all about its budget. Why in the world? Wow. You need to ask God to give you a vision of what to spend your money on, or you need to repent that you're not doing it. And if you don't know what else has got going on, come on over here. We got place to put it. We have loads and loads of places to put it. That's why it's called the aggressive life. It's not called the theological life, although there is a theological truth in there. I just don't understand it. We don't see Jesus affirming savings.
Yeah.
Just don't see it. And then obviously I have people say, well, you know, Pharaoh had to save for 7 years because famine was coming. I understand. I have some savings. I appreciate that. And you realize people have been telling me that for 28 years now. We've gone through four of those seven-year cycles and have never hit that. Can you just open yourself up that you're cheap and afraid and maybe unfaithful, that you don't have a vision that's big enough that takes faith and it takes resources?
That's great. Before we get hit this final round, I want to say this. I came on 4 years ago, we said, and part of me thought, you know, I missed it. I missed the glory days. I missed it when we built Dayton. I missed it when we went multi-site. I missed it when we crossed the bridge and went into another state. That's why I missed it. and it feels good. Feels
you're
good.
Not now, brother.
Feels good to have a lead senior pastor, who's taking aggressive moves to making sure that we move forward. I haven't missed anything.
You
best days are ahead of us.
You're totally right.
I agree. I think 10 times is too small. I can't wait to see what happens. And this is just the beginning. Commitment's in. You're right. Now right. We got to put pen to paper.
It's ominous, Joel, that and exciting that I'm coming into my 60th year next year. We had a guy on the podcast several months ago, Bob Beal, wrote a book on called Decades, which is more like a long pamphlet than a book. If you read it.
If I ever write a book, that's what it will be.
If you have a goal to read a book a week, put this on the list because you'll power through this and you'll feel smarter and you did it. But it's really good. He says the most productive decade in a person's life is their 60s. Because they have networking abilities, they've got wisdom they didn't have, they actually have more opportunities, and that's where I am. I'm going to go into my 60s with now being a part of a team that manages these resources and pushes into new territories. Like my next decade is going to be freaking great.
Yeah, it is.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it is. I can't wait. Can't wait to be on the team. All right. What we've all been waiting for, we're going to turn the tables and ask BT the lightning round questions. And I've heard him pick on people for expanding, so let's see if he can do it. All right.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I think so. Jesus.
It's
always the answer.
Aggressive mistake made during this push.
It was the last weekend. I quoted Rick Warren, and it was inappropriate, not helpful, and probably not true. He said years and years and years ago, I heard him preach. He said to the church, he said, you're not going to out-sacrifice me. Mm. And I said that in one of our services, and immediately felt like that was the wrong and bad thing to say. I didn't say it again.
Mm. All right. Biggest learning for you?
Have as many people carrying weight for the logistics on the thing as possible.
That's good. Favorite moment?
It's being on the stage at the leader event, which is 10 days before the final commitment Sunday, and on commitment Sunday, just seeing people come up really moved and hugging people and loving people and just seeing the resoluteness in faces and everything. It's an unbelievably bonding locker room experience. Mm.
Least favorite moment?
Having to make choices of what does get played or doesn't get played, what does get said or doesn't get said, because you just don't have time to do it all, and just wondering if that was the right choice and would the other thing have been better, and just not knowing.
Hmm. What's next? What's the next aggressive move?
It's spending these resources appropriately and positioning ourselves to see if the Holy Spirit sees fit to use as an awakening.
Ooh, I know it's a lightning round, but you'd said something in a previous meeting, or it was Kyle, but I believe you guys had talked about it in your team. Amount of people that win the lottery that go bankrupt. Do you remember that stat?
I did give that stat. I don't remember what it is. It's up there.
Yeah, 60-70% something. I don't remember verbatim either. So talk about the aggressive spend yet stewardship.
Well, how's that?
What's next?
How does that relate to the lottery?
We don't want to go bankrupt. We don't want to just spend because we have it. So we got to be aggressive, and we're not going to put it in savings yet. We're not going to be foolish.
Well, that's apples to oranges. Hmm. We didn't hit the lottery with this commitment number. We prayerfully worked our noogies off for it. Hmm. It's not at all with the lottery. People might think that. Like, again, we're always looking for a catch, for a reason why something isn't the way it is, for a reason why there's a weird thing happening, or a reason why this is bad. That's what everybody thinks who isn't generous. That's what everyone thinks who isn't sacrificial. Mm. You know who doesn't like tithing? People who don't tithe. Mm. You know who has the objections as to why the Bible doesn't support tithing? People who don't tithe.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know who it is who has the hardest time with marriage? People who refuse to commit and say I do. Hmm. You know who it is who has the hardest time sacrificing for children? Those who refuse to have children. You're talking about operating on a different level of commitment and abidedness in Christ when you do something like this than those who won't. And those who won't, the loudest boos always come from the cheap seats. They're always going to be the naysayers of this than that. But the truth is, this amount of resources is going to get handled really, really well, because the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. Past behavior is, this has always made us stronger, and God's only increased those numbers, and they've only got managed better. While we've also made mistakes and other things that haven't worked out. So I love being part of a church that understands those things and is supportive of it and
That's
is great. Adventurous. I love
That's
it.
Great. Well, it's been a pleasure, BT. What questions should I have asked you that I haven't asked you yet?
I would have asked how it is that you get a church aligned to a vision. But since you didn't ask it, I'm not going to talk about it.
No, so. We got to talk about this. We got to talk about this. If you stayed with us this long, we've got a bonus question where BT asked himself. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Vision. How in the world have you gotten a church of this size, any organization of this size, to align to such a vision?
Well, I know the question. I'm not sure I know the answer, but I'll think of some things as we go on.
Great.
You have to believe it to your bones. You've got it. You have to live it, eat it, drink it, so much so that you understand it. You know the taste of it. You see it in your mind. And you have to crock pot it. It's got to be in there stewing in your juices. You might have remembered, it was about a year ago, we had a series on Nehemiah, and I said, there's something stewing. I just can't bring it out. So I gotta crock pot it. Can't tell you about it right now. What was this? It was this whole thing.
Wow.
You know, you got to own it. You got to be able to see it. That's really what a vision is. By the way, it's not a vision if you've seen it with your own mind or with your own brains. If you've already seen it, then it already exists. It's not a vision is the way I'm using vision. It is a good thing you should do and maybe raise money for. But when it comes to visions, people haven't seen them. People hadn't seen the walls around Jerusalem built up. Nehemiah saw it. That's why he cried. He was crushed about it. You have to see it in you've got to know it. Not necessarily know that it's going to happen, but you have to understand what this thing is, and you've got to sit on it and crock pot it for it. And then you've got to start leaking it out to small groups of people who are close to you and have influence. Your board, your key staff, and just leaking it out like, this is what I'm thinking, and hearing how they respond to it, and perhaps how they sharpen it and cut things away and make it sharper, because maybe what you have in your mind isn't 100% formed, but they're going to help form that. And then you roll out the next level. You roll out to an all-staff meeting. And you see how people respond to that whole thing. And then you're gauging where people are contributing to it, and then you're putting bite to it. Then you're going back to the same people saying, if we're going to do this, I need you to do this. You got to be in on this. And you got to reward good behavior. You've got to give inspiring things. Stories are huge. People's stories and how God's changed their life and how this is going to affect that. You just got to hit all the bases, the relational component, the mental component, the emotional component, the spiritual component. How's this mesh with the Bible? And you have to do it consistently over time. You can't just say, hey, we need more money in our organization. What's a little jingle or creative container that I can roll out and then maybe see if this generates something in 3 months? It doesn't work that way. This is a crockpot long-term play, and you've got to own it. You've got to do the hard grunt work of aligning people to it.
And two follow-up questions on that. You can answer them both at the same time. One, does your vision, your end result, usually look like your beginning vision? I want you to tie that into. Two, can you, anyone that knows BT knows he has a high level of discernment. You have a high level of discernment. Can anyone, should anyone have a vision, or is it kind of reserved for a certain level of leader and influential person, if you will?
I think everyone can have a vision. It's just a factor of the complexity and size of the vision. If you've never seen anybody in your family get married and stay married, that's a great vision. It's not going to require some sort of 3-year campaign, you know? I think anybody can.
Okay. And then do your visions usually look verbatim like what you pictured, or is there usually a curved trail along the way?
No, there's a curved trail. You need just enough vision to take a step in that direction, and then the open heart to be able to be pliable and move. Where we are right now as a church, Joel, right now with having camps and people from all over the country coming in and pooping in the woods and revival. That was a big thing for the push, by the way. We had a revival. I just call it, it's called old school revival on the land. Don't have to camp. Come and go as you wish. And that cemented it for the whole church. At least the whole church understood why we invest in land and why we want to build a 20-acre lake, which is actually now going to be 17 if we can get the approvals. It was part of the journey of people embracing. But if you told me or the people who invited me to Crossroads to start Crossroads and be the first senior pastor, if you told me the Crossroads to be what it is now, no, no one had that vision. No, no, no one, no. All we had a vision was have some small church in Hyde Park that would reach young professionals.
Wow.
We didn't have any number goals. We didn't have any anything.
You had no idea when you came in that it would be anything close to what it is today.
No, no way. No, in fact, if I had heard of something like this, I probably would have judged it myself.
That's fair enough.
I'm reaping what I've sown, I guess. Yeah. No, I would have never had any. No. Start a thing called the CityLink Center, which brings people out of working poverty. And, like, your church fund it? Like, do the whole – all the startup? No. Go and – do a 220,000 square foot campus for girls you've rescued from the rape for profit industry in Nepal? No, I wouldn't. I didn't even know human trafficking was a thing. An app where I think it's a million people this year. There's a million prayers have been prayed in the Crossroads app as of now, something like
The iPhone wasn't even out yet.
No, it wasn't out. Yeah. I wouldn't even know. Didn't even know it was such thing as apps. No, you don't. You're just faithful doing the next step that you feel God puts on your heart. Yeah.
That's great. I didn't know I was allowed to just ask leadership questions. This might have been a whole different podcast.
You're allowed to do whatever you want, Joel. Whiskey,
Where does someone go if they want to find out more about 10X Push, specifically in Crossroads realm?
Crossroads.net/10X. Dude, that was good. Good questions. I picked the, but Dirt and I picked the right guy, so thank you so much. So I don't know what the, next steps is for folks. Maybe if you're a pastor, maybe something here will push you or tweak you a little bit. Maybe if you're, I don't know what it is, but I wanted to do this because this was something, this is the biggest, most aggressive thing that I've done. And I felt like I got some learnings. And I wanted people to have those. And so something here applies to you. And so I trust you're going to know that and do it. We'll see you next time in The Aggressive Life. Thanks for joining us on this journey toward aggressive living. Find more resources, articles, past episodes, and more at briantome.com. Pre-orders for my newest book, a 60-day devotional called The 5 Marks of a Man, 60 Days to a Powerful Life, are open right now on Amazon, along with all the other books in the 5 Marks library. Be sure to leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Then send an email to Dirt, that's Dirt, at briantome.com to get a free Aggressive Life sticker. Find more on Instagram at briantome. The Aggressive Life is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio.